Hi, I'm Tom Magrino. I'm an undergraduate over at UC Berkeley. I worked with David Wagner on this problem for the past year. And I'm here to talk about computing the margin of victory exactly for IRV elections. So, a little background. IRV, instant runoff voting. Here in San Francisco, it's called ranked choice voting. The idea is that instead of marking one single candidate like your typical Senate election or what have you, you put down a ranking of candidates that you prefer. And really, the idea is that we can use this to run a series of runoffs instantly without having to run multiple elections with all the setup and all the teardown. So the idea with determining the winner in IRV is you start with the question, do I only have one candidate? And if I do, well, great, I have a winner. If not, I have to run a runoff. And the runoff is essentially, I count each ballot towards the highest ranked candidate that's still running in the race. And then I remove the one candidate that has the fewest votes. I check again whether or not I have one candidate left. And if I do, I'm done. Otherwise, I just start all over and have another runoff. So an example here is with George Washington and friends. We'll start with the first round, and we'll count up all the ballots, and we'll have these counts. And so Ben Franklin, having the fewest, gets eliminated from the race. All his ballots get reallocated to others during the next runoff. And we continue this process again and again until we're left with one winner. So, but I'm here today to talk about the margin of victory, not specifically IRV. So margin of victory is, in our definition, is the minimum number of votes that, had you changed the ballot, would have resulted in a different winner. And it's specifically, we don't care so much about adding and removing ballots, but just ballots being modified. So it's a slight difference between David's work and mine. So for our classic first-past-the-post election, that would be half the difference in votes between the top two candidates. So first-past-the-post is your typical election, choose one, and count up the votes and see who wins. For IRV, it's not really as simple. So if we look at an election here, this is the county assessor race for Pierce County, Washington in 2008. If we look at the sort of election summary, which is what David was using, it's not so obvious. One might think that it's the difference between the last two candidates in the race in the last round, maybe divided by two, which would be about 3,000 votes, but when you do actually go through the math, as we'll see in a moment, you find out it's only 1,111 ballots. It's not very obvious. So it's a very tough problem that we have to solve. So why do we care? Well, margin of victory at the very least is how close an election was. If anyone cares, it's anyone who wants to really judge how close the election was. So it's the difference between the landslide election and the tight race. It really describes how much political mandate a candidate came in with. The other reason why we care is the one that David mentioned, which is, is that we care for risk-limiting audits. It's a necessary input for a lot of different risk-limiting audit procedures. As our margin of victory goes up, so our sample has to go down. If our margin of victory is very small, though, we have to sample a lot of ballots to be able, or units of auditing, to be sure that we didn't have an error that could have changed the outcome of the election. So our goal today is to talk about finding an algorithm that finds the exact solution for an IRV margin. And ideally, we want it to be efficient enough that if we had to get the number and perform a risk-limiting audit, it wouldn't be terribly painful. So I'm going to go ahead and start with a simple, terminology, which is first I'm going to talk about what's called a ballot signature. Ballot signature is going to describe exactly how a ballot was marked. We're going to represent it as a list like this. The idea is that it's a list of the candidates, starting with our most preferred candidate on the ballot all the way down to our least preferred. So in this case, it would be C is the most preferred candidate, followed by D, then A, and least of all B. Another piece of terminology is what we're going to call the election profile. It's really just a description of how the ballots were cast and exactly how many of each type of signature was cast. So in this case, it's going to be represented like a table below, where we see each signature along with the count that we observed in the race. And finally, last bit of terminology, which we're going to be using heavily, is elimination order. Elimination order is our list of candidates ordered by when they were removed from the election. So an elimination order such as Dan, Alice, Cass, Bob is referring to an election where Dan was eliminated from the election first, followed by Alice, then Cass, and then Bob was the winner. Now, to get to a solution, we're going to consider this idea. We're going to approach the problem of getting the margin of victory by considering alternative situations for the elimination order. So different ways the rounds could have played out. So we'll start with an election such as this one where originally Cass was eliminated from the election first, followed by Alice, and eventually Bob wins. And we'll consider two sets of cases. We'll consider alternative elimination orders where Cass would have won, such as these two, and alternative elimination orders where Alice would have won, such as these two. So for an example, this would be a case where Alice, Bob, Cass means Alice was eliminated from the race first, then Bob, then Cass wins. And we're going to consider each of these cases individually. Now, what we're going to consider these cases for is that we're going to find how many ballots do we need to change to get to one of these cases. And we'll call this number the distance to the alternative elimination order. The distance to is if we find the minimum distance to for any alternative elimination order, then we found the margin of victory because we found the one case that the different winner won. Now, in the paper, we describe how to do this with what's called integer linear programming, which is an optimization technique. The exact setups described in the paper, I don't really have enough time to get into it today, unfortunately. So we're going to consider our solution method so far. We're going to start with the original election and all the alternative cases. We'll find all our distance to values, which is the number of ballots to approach any of these situations. And our solution is then the minimum number out of these distances. So here it would be 35 as the margin of victory. So the basic algorithm is really simple. You say for each alternative elimination order, find the distance to it, return the minimum one. Now, this works. It's great. But it's very slow. Integer linear programming, as some of you might know, is an NP-complete problem. It's very slow to solve in the general case. And on top of this, we're solving it a large number of times. For M candidates, we're solving about M factorial different elimination orders. So we have to figure out something better. So our approach is going to be we want to find the distance to for the elections we care about, but we want to avoid the distance to for groups that are just completely infeasible. And the way we do that is we're going to try to lower bound the groups of distance to values. And so it allows us to do a more tree-like method like here. Now, to get to a lower bound, I'm going to start with a little scenario. We're going to consider rigging an IRV election. So we're rigging the IRV election. And we have already done all the changes. We're sitting there, and we've said, OK, I want candidate B to be eliminated first, followed by C, and eventually I want A to be the winner. I have some complete ordering. And I'm sitting back, and I'm watching my play. And suddenly I'm watching the news, and I find out B has been eliminated from the race. And I'm sitting there wondering to myself, well, did my nefarious plan just get ruined? Now, the answer is no. And the reason why is sort of obvious when you think about it. It's, well, B in our original plan was going to lose out first anyways. So if B is eliminated from the race, really whatever eliminated B just did our job for us. So had we known this earlier, in fact, we probably could have gotten away with changing fewer ballots in our nefarious scheme. So this gives us an idea to go in the reverse direction, get a lower bound for the values. So we know that if we find the elimination order CDAB's distance to, that this will give us a lower bound for anything that ends in CDAB. Because really what's the difference is the candidates got eliminated for us or we had to do the work. So the way we do this is we're going to take our original election, we're going to remove all mentions on the ballots of anyone who's not being considered in our shorter elimination order, and we'll go ahead and use the same calculations we did previously. So now this allows an optimized solution. What we can do is we can organize ourselves into a tree, And we'll go ahead down the nodes, adding candidates back into the race as long as it seems feasible. So you notice that the leaves are still the same things that we were considering earlier. So each of these is a full elimination order where someone else would have won. But the hope is that we're going to eliminate entire parts of the tree, so we're not doing nearly as much work. Now, just as an example, we're going to walk through this algorithm. So I have an election here with the election profile here, and the elimination order, which was Bob was eliminated first, then Cass, then Alice was the winner. So what I do is I start with my original situation of I have no candidates in the race. Now, in our implementation, we don't even consider this situation, but you might imagine that it takes zero ballots to get nothing to happen. So we go ahead and add a couple candidates back into the race. What we're going to do is we're going to first add back in our winners. So in one case, we'll consider cases where Bob would have won instead of Alice. And in the other case, we'll consider cases that Cass would have won instead of Alice. Now, as you might imagine, with only one candidate, there's still not a lot of work to do. So we have to go further into the tree. So we go ahead and explore Cass's side. So now we add in one more candidate. In one situation, we add back in Bob, and we find there's still no more work for us to do. This would have happened if we had just removed Alice from the race. In the other case, had we added back in Alice and left Bob out of the race, we find that we would have had to change 6 ballots for Cass to win still. So we already know that this situation is one that we need to not consider much until we've determined that that's the only way to go. So we go ahead and look a little bit further. We say, okay, well, let's add back in Alice and get a full election. And I want to see the situation of Alice, Bob, then Cass. So Alice is eliminated first, followed by Bob, finally Cass. Now, in this situation, we find out it only takes 4 ballots to rig the election to have this situation. So we already have a candidate answer that's better than this bound we found earlier on. So we don't need to explore the situation right here. So we go back up, we consider situations where Bob would have won. We look at the case where Alice is added back into the race. We find there's no ballots we need to change. And we add back in the case of Bob being the winner and Cass being the only other candidate. And we find that we have to change 7 ballots, so we don't need to consider that case any further. So we go ahead and we look at this case of Alice being eliminated first, followed by Bob. We add back in Cass and make her the first loser. And we find out it only takes 1 ballot to change the election. To get the solution, what you do is you take one of the ballots from this last category and you move it up to the category above it. So that in this situation, Cass will now be eliminated first, followed by Alice, and then Bob would win. So in our paper, we talk about some additional optimizations on top of this, but the main idea is the same. We go through a tree search and use this distance 2 calculation. There's a couple of heuristics and a little bit to optimize the integer linear program so it runs a little bit faster. But I'd like to step back and sort of go over what we have. So now we have a branch and bound algorithm for finding the margin of victory for IRV. And while this isn't guaranteed to run in polynomial time, we'll see that it's pretty fast in practice. So how do we check this? Well, we went through 25 different IRV races, all of them in the US. We successfully computed 24 of the margins. The 25th one was for San Francisco here. It was 18 candidates, which proved to be too many for our calculation. So for the other elections, we had anywhere between 2 and 11 candidates. So it scales up to about 11 candidates as far as we know. So we'll also see in a moment that there's a significant improvement over the original method, which is we took the elections, and in one case, like Pierce County, it went from 7 minutes to calculate the margin of victory by using this sort of direct unoptimized method, and it went down to about 5 seconds. Most elections that we took a look at took under 3 minutes to calculate the margin of victory, and all the margins took under 2 hours. So here's a graph of our times. The blue line is the best fit line for our margin of victory calculation using the unoptimized method. I should note that this is a log scale, so these are powers of 10. And then the red line is the optimized version. If you notice, in almost every case, there's a better computation time for the optimized solution. Now, We also notice that, except for the cases where we have 11 candidates, which we couldn't even calculate with our unoptimized version, we're looking at about 3 minutes or so. So in conclusion, we presented an IRV margin calculation. This method was now used to calculate the margin for 24 different IRV elections in the US. And our evaluation showed that in most cases, it's a reasonable calculation that takes a reasonable amount of time. So I'd like to thank you all for listening to me and ask for questions.
Vanessa Teague from the University of Melbourne. One thing that happens very often in practice in Australian IRV elections is that you can see immediately from the first preference tallies that only a handful of the candidates are anywhere close to winning.
Right.
And that there's this big, long tail of candidates whose first preference tallies make it immediately obvious you can eliminate the whole lot in one hit and redistribute their preferences and get exactly the same answer. And I think the first speaker had a name for this kind of elimination,
right,
which was basically the same idea as his kind of graph skipping thing. So my question would be, how useful would that optimization be as a kind of pre-processing stage before your algorithm?
Oh, I see. Go ahead.
And I guess just the second question was, if I hadn't seen your paper and I had to think of a quick and dirty algorithm for trying to compute this, I'd do that elimination, and then I'd just do some kind of obvious, slow, exact thing on the small number of remaining candidates. How often would your what would the data look like for the cases when your algorithm would work and this quick and dirty thing I just described wouldn't work?
So you mean the last round margin?
Yeah.
Okay. So to the first question of weak candidates, as we called them when we were doing this research, so we didn't have enough time to really explore optimizations that really preyed upon this idea. I haven't looked exactly into David Carey's method in terms of how he handles this, but there are certainly ways you can make use of his methods to optimize our method further. One obvious way is that you can have a lot of these distance two calculations back out early if we already know that it's not even going to be within the bounds we care about. As far as weak candidates, in the paper, we suggested a couple ideas on how to handle cases of weak candidates, but we did not have enough time to really explore it, so I can't really comment on how useful it would be. So your second question was on... you're going to have to remind me, I'm sorry.
That's right. And if the answer is you haven't explored it yet, then you probably haven't explored the answer to the second question either. But maybe we can talk about it offline. I guess the question was just to wonder whether there's an alternative.
It's the last round margin. We did actually compute the last round margins for all these elections, and except for two cases, the last round margin was exactly the margin we calculated. So,
yeah, right.
So our data suggests that there really is a correlation, or it really is sort of a good predictor.
Yeah,
it's not always a predictor, but we found in most cases it generally was the same.
Another way that I would interpret that is possibly to ask whether, if the last round margin is the real margin, does that just mean that there were really only two serious candidates from the beginning anyway?
I couldn't comment on that.
I'd like to ask, Jim Soper, Voting Rights Task Force, I'd like to ask for a little clarification on the implementation or the use of this margin of victory in actually doing the audit. Are you going to use the same margin of victory for each step in the IRV election?
So, our research didn't really focus on that. Actually, Philip Stark, who's behind you shaking his head, has sort of sent a couple of emails to me and given me some insight on how this works. I expect to see some papers in the future that talk about this, but you certainly wouldn't use the same margin throughout the entire audit process. So, or you ideally wouldn't, but I can't really comment on how exactly it's being used, just that it is used.
Okay, thank you.
Philip Stark from your alma mater. So, I mean, it seems like this really is now practical to, in the course of auditing, I mean, if you get things down to 7 seconds to a few minutes, then every time you see a discrepancy in the interpretation of a ballot or a batch of ballots, you could recompute the effective margin, taking that into account. So this is really, really encouraging. One of the questions I have, though, the limitation on computational complexity that made it impossible to deal with the San Francisco mayoral contest, presumably that's some complicated combination of the number of candidates, the number of votes cast in the election, and the actual margins? What leads to...
It's actually just mostly the number of candidates. The number of votes cast might affect the computation time for each individual integer linear program. I have to stop myself from saying ILP. But really, the heaviest predictor, hands down, was the number of candidates in the race. We even have some optimizations in the paper that handles the case of how many candidates can you put on a ballot, which was another factor we were worried about. But it turns out that it's really just mostly dominated by the number of candidates, and that's why the San Francisco election wasn't feasible, because it had 18 candidates, I believe 6 of which were write-ins, which would also ideally help with the weak candidate optimizations.
So the number of candidates that you can vote for doesn't matter that strongly. The number that you're invited to rank doesn't.
Yes. So we found that it does have some influence, and it certainly will make it than an election where you can rank fewer candidates. But it was really small compared to the amount of increase you would get from just adding one more candidate into the race overall.
If I could just one more thing. So where is sort of the dividing line right now for standard computing technology? Is it at 10? Is it at 15? Do you?
We weren't able to test it because we didn't have real election data, which sort of is the only predictor here. I would imagine it's on the order of 12 or 13, just based on initial testing, but I can't say for sure.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for the Anand Sarwate, I'm from UC San Diego. I have to look to check myself. So I have three quick questions. I guess one is, so I think ballots are counted as no vote or overvote if they mark two candidates for the first choice. So adding the fact, preserving the number of ballots when you calculate the margin, the total number of ballots cast when you calculate the margin may or may not, may affect things. I don't know. I have to think about it. I don't know if you thought about that.
So the way we computed it is, even if it was an invalid ballot, like an overvote, as that's called, we included it as the number of ballots. We included that as a ballot that was perhaps left blank.
Oh, okay.
So in our calculation, it's included.
It's included. Okay. Two other short questions. Did you find a dependence on the running time on the actual margin, like percentage of the electorate? So is it harder to compute a tight margin versus a loose margin? Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we explored that, and that's an interesting question. I'd be interested to know the answer.
And then the last question was, so in the end, you actually compute a pattern of specific ballot errors. These ballots should be changed from this to this other thing, and that's the rigging problem, right?
Right.
Did you see anything interesting? Did you look at what those rigged ballots had to look like? Was it interesting at all? Was it pretty straightforward, like just take all the ballots from this guy and give it to the other guy?
So typically, it showed up something like that. The more interesting thing is, and this is actually one of the optimizations we use, is that you don't care so much about what exactly the ballot was marked with, so much as where exactly the ballot would count each round. Mm-hmm. So it really simplifies a matter of rigging the election when all you care about is where does this ballot count each round once I've solved the problem. But as far as I could tell, for most of the elections, it was mainly just move from one candidate to another.
Candidate two to candidate one.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Howdy, Neil McBurnett. I'll say Boulder, Colorado this time. One of the challenges with auditing IRB is that there's a whole lot of information in the exact ranking, and there are people concerned about pattern voting attacks. And I'm wondering if you have looked at any ways or what it would take to reduce that amount of information so that it was not susceptible to pattern voting by, again, back to the question before, maybe combining some candidates. And this is for you and anybody else working on IRB. You know, what are the real challenges in terms of being able to publish all the data that the public needs in order to see that the audit worked, whether it regards margin of victory or anything else involved?
So I will say that we haven't really explored it much on the pattern attacks of IRV. It's certainly the case that each ballot's going to have more bits of data that you can express. And in fact, one comment that, which is related, which is I notice in races where you could mark all the ballots, or sorry, all the candidates if you like, there certainly were unique signatures. So that's something to take into consideration versus your more typical case like San Francisco where you mark only three candidates. I really don't think I have any ideas currently on how to solve the problem of too much information, but it certainly is a problem.
So I have one question. You're solving an optimization problem, and I was wondering if you had a short proof of optimality, or after you compute the margin and you say this is the margin, does everyone else have to go through all of the same work?
Oh, I see. I do not believe we have one on hand. It takes a little work to see it, especially when you start doing the tree method. For the simpler method, it's a little bit easier because you walk through every single possibility, trusting the subproblem, which I don't have time to get into online. It really is a sort of simple thing of, well, it has to be the minimum of any possible situation where we do win. Now, the other interesting thing is our solution method allows us to actually see how it's done. So for giving it to the sort of non-math person, you can actually see exactly how the rigging happens. And that helps to give you some more anecdotal evidence. But as far as a mathematical proof, trusting that your optimization subproblem works, it's really, for the original case, easier. And for the other case, you have to see the proofs in the paper.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have time for one more?
Oh, sure.
Let me actually, the code is not available currently, but mainly because it's dependent on a proprietary library for the actual solver. I might release the code that uses the solver for those who actually have the ability to use it. But yeah, I could look into posting something.
Peter Neumann, SRI. I want to take us back to Josh's comment at the very beginning today on transparency and being able to identify individual voters who are casting weird combinations of absentee ballots. There is a monster problem here, I think, with transparency in the sense that some of the other schemes intend to publish all of the ballots and hope that nobody can divine who voted how and that you can't prove how you voted. The transparency in this case is a real mess because if you try to optimize your counting in some way, for example, you don't count all of the ballots. It works in small precincts or in modest elections, but if you try to divide the ballots up and count them in pieces, you get different results depending on how you do it. You guys all know that. So the transparency problem is enormous, and I guess my general question is, how the hell do we address that one? Because I don't trust anybody in this business. And the idea that your magical process of coming up with something that is immune to hacking and vote shifting and so on is altogether unclear to me in this.
So
don't use IRB. If you're gonna use it, how do you have any understandability of what's going on?
Yeah, so I mean that's certainly room for future research. We were mostly focused on getting this value for auditing, which is, you know, necessary since there are elections being held in IRV style. So I certainly don't have the answer, but I expect that we're going to see works in the future that talk a little bit more about how we handle these problems, or whether or not we can.
All right, let's thank David and Tom one more time.